at times is becoming farcical. And you have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form.
For your first chance to hear Brian O'Driscoll on OTB, download the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications.
All right, so Just Eat have just launched a brand new partnership with Leinster Rugby. And as part of that, I'm delighted to be joined by Leinster, Ireland and Lions star, Jack Conan. How are you keeping, Jack?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm very good. How are you?
Does it take a bit of getting used to still, the Lions star, Jack Conan?
The star bit, anyway. I don't know about that, but I haven't heard it turn around too much, so it's still nice to hear.
Like when you're back at Leinster training a couple of weeks ago, you're strutting in now, you're the big dog.
Far
yourself and Robbie Henshaw in the corner and Tyke, you know, you lads wouldn't understand.
No, far from it. Like you can't even have a conversation with the lads there and be taking the mick out of you, saying you've changed and you're looking click and all this, like, so we've had to kind of separate ourselves and not be seen talking publicly just in case we get a bit of abuse. But no, the lads are pretty quick to bring you back down to earth. And you know, I think you get one-on-one conversations and lads want to pick your brain about it. But no, everyone's very complimentary about the whole thing, and same with the coach and staff. But it was good to get back in, see all the lads and get back to it.
Yeah, one of the things that often comes out of a Lions tour that players say, you have to be open with your teammates. You have to share ideas. You have to share what you've learned with Ireland or with Leinster, because when you're there, you want to win. Did you come back with a whole lot of information of what other players have been doing at their clubs and at their countries?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you pick up a lad's brains when you're away, because obviously we had such a long amount of time in kind of close quarters with each other, not leaving the hotel and that. So, you know, talk a bit everything, and rugby eventually comes up. And, you know, I spoke to a lot of the extra lads about the way they kind of do their pick and go stuff and bits and bobs like that. And you bounce ideas off each other and ways of doing things. You know, talk to, you know, Tom Curry and Sale and stuff, and they've kind of scrapped their captains one day, which we thought was, no one had heard of that before here. So,
why?
I don't know. I think that the mindset was just to keep lads a bit fresher. So, look, I wouldn't mind another day off during the week, be all right, but I'm not sure it'll be happening anytime soon. But, you know, you took kind of nuggets of information and things from players and coaches when you're away and bring it back. And we've sat down with Stuart and Leo and kind of gone through the whole process of the 8 weeks with them. And we kind of told them the bits that we thought worked really well and the bits that I think we can implement here and be better for it. So there's been lots of conversations over the week. And, you know, even yesterday, Stuart presented to the whole group kind of the bits of learning that he took from what myself, Tyke, Robbie and Ronan, of course, had said to him, and we're all kind of had the same pieces that we shared with him that we thought were important to take here and take the learnings from.
It's such a good story how you end up at the Lions, considering the injury problems you've had, the disappointment around the World Cup, and at a period it felt like you were, you know, scrapping for a place in the Leinster team, you're scrapping for a place in the Ireland team, and next thing you're starting all three Lions tests. With a bit of time afterwards and maybe a whole lot of time in South Africa in a hotel room, like, do you sit and think, like, I have achieved something really, really special here?
Yeah, the magnitude of it all wasn't lost to me. Even when I was over there, I realized, I was like, look, this is kind of probably once in a lifetime opportunity to be here, to wear this really special jersey, to be among a great bunch of lads and great bunch of coaches. And I'm always kind of looking back for inspiration to propel me forward. And obviously all the tough times are kind of what fuels you and fuels your desire to go forward and be better. So yeah, look, it's been an incredible road from being injured and missing out in World Cups, and then, you know, struggling with probably other little niggles that I picked up when I got back from that, and everything over lockdown to go on and play three tests. You know, I wouldn't have, if you'd asked me this time last year that I was going to go on a line sword and start three tests, probably would have laughed at you. But look, I loved it. I'm so appreciative for the opportunities I was given, and I loved every second of it. I really did. It was an incredible experience, and I'm better for it.
That comment of this time a year ago, like, there's certain players who you sort of know from a very young age, if everything goes right for them, they're going to end up as Lions. They're those sort of natural talents, or they're in a position where they're just the best of the best at a young age. Like, if you're saying a year ago you weren't quite sure if you'd be a Lion, when you're there and you're around all these players, did you feel straight away once you got the call from Aaron Gatland that you're in, or once you saw on the screen like everyone else that you're in, did you feel, you know what, I do belong here?
It's not something I really thought of until I got over there and we played a few games. And I put in a few, I suppose after that Japan game, the first one over in Edinburgh, you know, I played 70 odd minutes or whatever it was, and, you know, huge occasion. And after that, we were sitting around having a few beers after the game. I just thought, you know, I'm happy with how it went. You know, there's no need to doubt yourself. There's no need to kind of question if you're good enough. You know, you went out and you had a good performance. Just enjoy it. You know, you're meant to be here, and you have a right to be here, and just make the most of it. So that was a massive stepping stone for me, that game, and just how I played. And I was really happy. That was a really good starting block after having two really tough weeks in Jersey with all the lads, and everyone worked incredibly hard, then to get that first start and to play even in front of fans and crowds and my family and my missus, my girlfriend, and to have them all over there was so special. So that was a huge kind of lifting point for me, and I thought I'd kind of really kick on from here.
Are you someone that plays their best rugby when you feel content like that, when you feel like you belong? Are you somebody who plays the best rugby when you've a chip on your shoulder and you're trying to prove somebody wrong?
I suppose I probably would have been like that, where growing up and kind of coming from not a big rugby school, or coming into the academy probably a bit later than other lads in similar positions, I felt like I had to have that bit of a chip on the shoulder, that my mentality was to prove people wrong. But now as you get a bit older and you've been around a few years, and you know, you've 100 odd caps for Leinster, what it is, caps for Ireland, things like that, that I was more just going to try and enjoy it and you know, enjoy the experience. And once I've trained well and I've trained hard, and once that's happened and I'm happy with all my detail, then I think I'm in the best position to play. And it's not necessarily when I have someone else to prove wrong, but something to prove to myself. You know, so when I'm fit and I'm motoring well, that's when I'm at my best, when I'm happy and I'm enjoying it.
So when you weren't fit then, when you were going through those difficult days with injury, were those pretty dark days, or was there an inner confidence that, you know, this will work out and I'll trust the science, I'll trust the medicine? Or were there pretty difficult moments where you're sort of questioning the long-term future?
Oh, absolutely. Like, seriously difficult moments. Even throughout the rehab, I was coming back, and kind of after the World Cup, I was going to get back kind of mid-February. So I was like, look, there's loads of time in the season here for me to kick on and put my hand up for, you know, whatever tour was it supposed to be at the end of 2020. So I was happy. I wasn't too kind of low, but then obviously the pandemic kicked in and we everyone had to go get time away from it all. So it was more when I got back kind of 8 or 9 months later in the August, and we started playing again, and I was fit, but I just wasn't playing to the level that I could have or I'd previously been at. And I found that the most frustrating and kind of most difficult thing to deal with, because I knew there was so much more in me and I could be so much better, and I had been so much better, but yet I wasn't at the level where I needed to be. And I suppose that probably a lot of that stemmed from being too caught up in it all and worrying too much and not just kind of enjoying the game and appreciate where I was. I had a small calf injury a few weeks later after that. And it wasn't until then when I made my big return and I picked up another little niggle that I was like, you know what, that's, you know, you've got hopefully 6-7 years left of a career at this stage. You can't spend that much amount of time worrying and overthinking about things, because it's just, you know, you're in a great position, you're privileged to do what you do, and it would be such a waste if I spent all this time during the week and building up the games, stressing out about it. So I just thought, right, I have completely changed my mindset about it.
How'd you do that?
I suppose from just taking a step back, it was that injury, that small calf injury, that I was only out for 3 or 4 weeks, but it was just looking back over the time off and I always say the games I played previously, I was like, that's just no way to do it. Like, you know what I mean? You weren't loving it, you weren't enjoying it as much as you had been previously, because you're putting all this pressure on yourself.
So were you going into those games stressed that something was going to pop here?
No, it wasn't. I wasn't worried about re-injury per se. That's, you know, that's just a part of it. And look, I've obviously had my fair share, but I was more worried about performance. You know, I felt I'd been away from the game for so long. I'd come back. You know, you have, you know, you've got incredible back rowers in Leinster. They'll push on. They're putting more and more pressure on you and everyone else. You know, Kaelin and Max and stuff. And obviously, Josh, Will, Scott Penny, Martin Maloney, Reese, all these lads, quality players. So I felt the pressure to go out and perform to a really high standard in my very first game back, which is just, it's so difficult to do. You can't spend that much time away. Well, maybe some lads can, but I couldn't anyway. I couldn't just come back and hit the ground running and perform really well. So, and then every time I didn't perform to the standard I wanted to, it just increased the pressure for the next game. So, you know, there was kind of, I think we played Munster, Ulster, Munster, Saracens quarterfinal. Then we had, I think it was maybe the Pro 14 final. So it was kind of four or five really, really high pressure games, must win, you know, kind of like knockout rugby games. And it was the span of 5 or 6 weeks. And to this day, that has been the most stressful 5 or 6 weeks of my life. Those few weeks where I was just really struggling with the pressure of it. The pressure I was putting on myself more than anyone else. So then when I got that kind of 3 or 4 weeks of not playing, I realized, Jesus, that's just no way to do it, you know. So ever since then, I just told myself, look, I'm not going to worry about, I'm just going to try and enjoy it. You know, I'm going to train really hard. I'm going to try being as best shape as I can be. I'm going to do all my rehab, stay on top of all that, be as fit as I can. I'm going to enjoy training more. I'm going to just try and enjoy the games more. I still get nervous. Everyone gets nervous. It's part of it. But I just said, look, if you make a mistake or things don't go well, just that's just life. Just, you know, learn from it and get on with it, but don't let it, you know, keep you down. So that's kind of been my mantra for the last 18 months or so, or whatever. And sorry, even less. Sorry. And it's been great. I'm enjoying it all way, way more than I had been for a long time. So yeah, I'm in a good spot and physically good and mentally definitely dealing with things a lot better.
I can't imagine you're the only player who goes through those sort of stresses, particularly at a club like Leinster, where there's so much talent. And it's often seen as such a strength of a squad of, you know, you can't have a bad game in this squad because somebody else is ready to step in. But actually, every player has a bad game. And like, from a coach's point of view, they can't have players having one bad game and suddenly, you know, it's affecting them mentally and they're really struggling with the fact that they've lost a position off the back of one bad game. I'm sure a lot of players in that squad, I don't know if you've spoken to other players as to how they deal with that of knowing you're going to have a bad game, but not letting it affect the next 3-4 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, talking to a lot of lads over the kind of the last few months, people who've been particularly close to me about it all and kind of how it shifted my mindset. And I kind of try just sometimes in changing after the game, where lads might be a bit low, you know, I just kind of would take a second, put an arm around someone and be like, look, these things happen. Like, I know it's tough and it's easy for me to say now, maybe if I wasn't playing or I played well and someone else hadn't, but you know, you pick yourself up and you go to train on Monday, you train hard and you put yourself in a good position and then you just try to forget about it. You take your learnings, but then you don't carry it on into the next week. So, look, it's some people are better at dealing with others. I definitely wasn't good at dealing with it. But I think the kind of the focus in Leinster where everything's kind of next moment focused helps a lot. If you can just stay in that moment and stay be living for the next moment, if you can really do that, it makes a massive difference.
And was that a realization you were able to come to yourself during that period of even those 4 or 5 matches and the stress you were putting yourself under? Or is that an intervention, but that your girlfriend or family or coaching staff are saying, like, you're not doing yourself any favors here?
No, I definitely think, well, I talked to my girlfriend, like, you know, I said to her all the stresses I was having and, you know, she's obviously very sympathetic to it all and, you know, tries to help out as much as she can and you know, I don't think it wasn't until afterwards looking back and it, you know, that I just kind of realized myself as just like, it's too short of a career and too good of a life that we have to spend, you know, a proportionate amount of time not enjoying it, you know. Don't get me wrong, there was some moments in between all that, like when you're lifting trophies, no matter how you played, that you do enjoy. But, you know, I'm trying to find a bit more enjoyment in the day-to-day, no matter what I'm doing. So I think it was just, yeah, help from my girlfriend, help from my mates kind of outside of rugby as well, and, you know, their views on it. And probably, you know, talking to them about it and just getting a different opinion on things, you know, a different kind of mindset. So,
because they all probably look in from the outside and think, you're living the dream here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it does, like, sometimes you need to just, you know, tell yourself, you know, cop on a little bit. Like, shouldn't mean it's only, not to say it's only a game, but some days it is only just a game. So, you know, you just need to be a bit more appreciative, and it takes time to get there. And it can't always be that way that, you know, the penny drops you and you're just like, ah, you know, don't worry about it, you'll be grand. So sometimes it takes a while. But definitely talking always helps. I'm quick to share my thoughts and feelings with a lot of people about these kind of things. Right. So it definitely has helped me a lot.
Yeah, and some transformation from being in that place to, I'd imagine, the feelings on the pitch and in the dressing room after winning that first test down in South Africa. The last time I spoke to you, you were with James Lowe, and he told us your nickname was Moaning Conan. And to be honest, it's always stuck with me. I couldn't watch the Lions series without thinking Moaning Conan. And it's stuck now. You might have had good reason to moan. I know it's a Lions test. It's the ambition for everybody. But what was it like, particularly in those 5-6 weeks leading up to the first test, when you're in South Africa, there's all sorts going out outside your bubble and within the bubble, where there's positive COVID tests, there's a massive outbreak in the South African squad, there's riots going on in South Africa. Like, this is not the living with the Lions that you would have grown up watching and thinking that the Lions is going to be. And at one stage, people are calling for the test series to be abandoned, to be brought back to England. What was it like living through that?
I'm going to address the Moaning Conan thing first. James Lowe, of all people. The Moaning thing didn't come out the whole tour. No one had said it. So, like, Tiger, Robbie hadn't said it the whole way through. And it wasn't until about the second last week that Conor Murray called me Moaning in front of a few of the lads. And they're like, why are you calling him that? And he's like, oh, he's always complaining, which is, I'm not going to complain about complaining because that will prove people right. But literally, I survived about 6 weeks of tour without anyone calling me Moaning, which was good. But I think, like, when we were over there, you know, it was kind of out of sight, out of mind a little bit. I obviously, in Joburg, when we were there, there was all the riots and things like that. But you weren't on watching South African news, or there wasn't papers in the hotel and things like that. So, you know, you'd heard rumblings about it and things like that. But it didn't feel like it was happening there and then, because it was kind of, we were in our own little bubble, shut off from the rest of the world. Obviously, the chat of it being, all of it being moved to the UK was addressed pretty early on when those kind of rumors had surfaced. But that was put to bed pretty quickly and saying, look, absolutely, this is not going to happen. Under no circumstances will it be moved to the UK. So even though there was still a lot of chatter online and, you know, talking to friends and family back home, they're like, oh, we're here, it's going to be moved. We knew, we were told, look, this is absolutely not going to happen. It was strange. Strange enough, one of the best days we had on tour, one of the most memorable days anyway, and it was kind of a good sign of how tight all the lads became, was when we had that COVID case and we were down to go play the Sharks. And we'd been sitting in our room all day and waiting for test results and see who came back negative and close contacts and all the things like this. We were supposed to meet on the bus, get on the bus at 6 o'clock, and at 5 to 6, lads were like, are we playing this game? Is this actually going ahead? No one had a clue. So everyone just kind of sheepishly got dressed, went downstairs, boots in their bag and things like gum shields, lifting blocks and all that, and then stood in the foyer of the hotel waiting for a WhatsApp to say, yeah, lads, game's going ahead, everyone on the bus. But then we found out that, you know, certain players were deemed close contacts, whatever, and there had to be a massive reshuffle of the team. So there was lads screaming and shouting, being like, oh, play, put me in. Like, you know, well, Jamie George, I think, said he'd be sub at half on the bench if he needs to be, and whatever else. So it was, you know, I think we were all nearly laughing at the circumstances when we were strolling down to get onto the bus. And, you know, I think there was six or seven back rows that played. And Hamish came on at 12. Toby came on, myself, Tom Curry, Courts, like at least six back rows played in that different position. So it was something definitely we bonded over afterwards. You know, you can only make the most of the circumstances and the situations that you're in, and that's something that brought everyone together, and it was definitely one of the most memorable days. So look, it wasn't ideal. We would love to have crowds there and had that kind of that red wave, that red army that travels all over the world to support the Lions. But I think we absolutely made the most of the circumstances, and it was still an incredibly enjoyable 6 weeks away. So
It's a hard thing to try and put yourself back 2-3 months and think about where we were in COVID, because it all moves so fast. But at the time, there's the Delta variant, and people are very concerned about the long-term impact and long COVID. For your family being that far away, and they're seeing that suddenly there's, firstly for them, that there's cases and the concern that you might end up testing positive for COVID, but also within the camp, when I know there's a sort of strange buzz maybe around, are we going to play, are we not going to play? But the potential ramifications, if that had spread through the squad, were, you know, possibly that the series couldn't have gone ahead. Is that a, you have a lot of time in a room, I don't know who you were rooming with, but by yourself or with your roommate, like, was that something you're quite nervous about at the time?
It was, because at that stage, obviously nobody wanted to have the tour cancelled. It was a bit of a miracle that it happened and got ahead. And, you know, geez, even if it was put on another year later, there's no guarantees that I'd be there, and our other lads would have been there, you know. So I think everyone was thankful that I went ahead. I know I was. So yeah, definitely, like those days when there's, you know, a case or two or close contacts and things, and it was definitely a worry that, you know, what happens if it just doesn't go ahead. But again, like, we were doing everything in our power, mass social distancing, you know, separate buses for backs and forwards, you know, designated seats at dinner, all these things. We were doing our utmost to kind of be COVID safe and follow all the protocols. So look, we were blessed really at the end of it to only have one case or whatever it was over the 8 weeks. So I think it was a testament to the work that was put in by the medical staff and all the work that the players did throughout as well. You know, it's something that people were pretty hard on us till the end. So it was unbelievably grateful that it went through in the end.
Who were the guys you bonded with then, that when the next Six Nations comes around or you're playing in Champions Cup games, that you look forward to having a beer with?
You know, there wasn't one bad fella on the tour. Everyone got along. Everyone made a massive effort to spend time together. The lads would probably end up spending the most time, probably a lot of the Exeter lads, a lot of the English lads, Johnny Hill and Luke Cowan-Dickey and Sam Simmons and stuff, and Elias and Jamie George and Owen Farrell and stuff, because, you know, I think other lads probably went off and played a bit of cards and stuff the whole time, where us, the few English lads and a lot of the Irish lads, we'd be just sitting around having coffees and chatting away. So they're definitely the blokes that you probably spend most of the time with. In the downtime, there was a pool table and a blackjack table, so we were forever sitting around that, playing a bit of blackjack and passing a few hours. So it was like, considering we couldn't leave the hotel, and you know, there was a limited amount of things to do, it was unbelievable crack now. It really was, like, and lads really bought into it, and it made the whole thing that bit more special.
It's a different Lions experience for everybody, depending on the game time you get. And Ian Henderson was out last week talking about his frustrations of the tour and feeling how Warren Gatland had his favourites. You were one of Warren Gatland's favourites, clearly. He picked you for every test start. And the way he spoke about you, particularly after the first test, and how you just don't make mistakes, how you're such a sponge for the amount of detail that they want to give you. Was there a moment over the tour where you realised, you know, Warren Gatland is a fan, that he seems to see something in me?
That's a good question. Not particularly. You know, I didn't, thinking back to that kind of meeting on the Monday of the first test week, no one had a clue who was playing. No one had been told. There was no kind of whispers of anything like that. So when I was sitting in that meeting and you're waiting to hear your name called, it seemed your name's going to be called out, I wasn't thinking, oh, you know, I think Gats, you know, I think he likes the way I play. I think he appreciates me as a player and things like that. You know, it was an unbelievable moment. Something I'll never forget, seeing your name up on the board on the screen. But, you know, Gats is a man of few words. He speaks when he needs to, and you know, it's good to kind of have a few words quietly with you. So I didn't have a massive interactions with him, so I didn't think he was I'm not saying there was no moment where it was like, oh yeah, I think now he really likes me, or you know, I think he really likes me as a player kind of thing. But he spoke really well when he needed to speak to you, and if he had something to say, you knew it was always going to be something really important. So you every word he said kind of had a lot of weight to it. You know, and by the end of it, you know, I got to chat to him a bit more as the tour went on. But no, he keeps his cards pretty close to his chest.
How do you reflect on the three tests then? Because so much happened around them, and Razzie Erasmus. Tell us about the Razzie Erasmus video and how quickly that was shared around the Lions WhatsApp group.
To be fair, before anyone had seen it, there was a message thrown in saying, look, lads, there's this video going around on social media. You'll probably see it on Twitter. Don't share it. Don't react to it. Don't, you know, rise to it, anything like that. To be honest with you, I'd seen snippets of it on Twitter and things like that, but I think it was quite long in the end, wasn't it? It was long. So I was like, this is a bit of a strange move, but I was like, I'm not sitting down watching this like 40 minutes, no way. So I don't think, to be honest with you, there wasn't a whole lot of chat about it amongst the players anyway. Maybe the coaches obviously probably had a lot more dealings with the refs and things like that, whatever else, but I think lads kind of thought, geez, that's a bit strange. But no one was really dissecting it, because I don't think lads really invested the time to watch it. Definitely a different approach from him, but yeah, I suppose it probably got the results it needed in the end, didn't it?
Was it a different approach in general, did you feel, from, well, Erasmus in particular, him on as water boy, the way they were able to just slow a game down and play it on their terms? Would you have noticed Erasmus chatting to players when he came in as a water boy?
To be honest, I think I'd seen him. He was water boy for that South Africa A game, and people were like, that's a bit different. It's a bit strange. But like, as players, like, no one really cared. Like, do you know what I mean? It makes no odds to us if he's doing that. Now, don't get me wrong, it was frustrating, as we obviously want to play a bit more tempo in our game when there was so many stoppages and, you know, South African water boys and physios and everyone else were on every 10 seconds. We obviously wanted to inject a bit of pace into the game and raise the tempo. But look, that's probably something that needs to be dealt with by World Rugby or something like that, the amount of stoppages there were. But look, it was a good ploy by them in the end. You know, it suited obviously the style of rugby they wanted to play, and definitely hindered the way we wanted to play.
Yeah, was it well over 2 hours, the first test? Nobody could quite believe it.
Yeah, it was more of an NFL game than it was a rugby game by the end of it, like really getting to that kind of level. So obviously, even as a neutral or a spectator, it wouldn't be the most entertaining game to watch at that length, to say the least. So I think the other tests were slightly better anyway, which was good. But yeah, definitely that first test, it was frustrating, the amount of stoppages that there were, especially the style we wanted to play. And it's hard to get into a game with that many stoppages.
How tough was it physically, the three tests? Like, you talked to Brian O'Driscoll about, you know, his favourite games, and he still goes back, I think, to the second test in 2009, even though they lost, just because you felt like you'd been in this absolute war and that every ounce of your being was tested. Is that how you look back in a couple of those games?
Yeah, it was definitely incredibly physical, because they're just such big men. You know, the DNA of their game, you know, scrum, maul, line-out, you know, they obviously put a lot of bodies into the ruck and things like that. So it was incredibly physical. But in saying that, because there was a lot of stoppages and kind of a lot of ball in the air time, it didn't feel like it was a lot of running. So it was difficult, it was challenging in some ways, but in comparison to other games, my legs probably felt fresher in those kind of games than they had in even previous ones on the tour, even compared to the likes of Japan, because there was, you know, less meters in it, because of the way they wanted to play. So you woke up Sunday morning and you knew you'd gone into battle the day before, and your shoulders were hanging and your back was in bits. But I definitely felt like I had more in the tank than my legs anyway.
So you're back now at Leinster, back training the last couple of weeks, back on the pitch, I presume, over the next couple of weeks. Do you feel, I'm not saying you're strutting around the place, which we touched on earlier, but now that you're a Lion, that there's an expectation on you to be more of a leader? Maybe you were that person already, but do you think your role in the Leinster squad, the Ireland squad, when you get back together in November, has changed because of your experience during the summer?
I think, well, in Lens in particular, there's always an onus on us to share our opinions and our thoughts and to pitch in. You know, Stuart hates when he asks a question in a meeting and it takes 30 seconds for someone to answer. So, you know, I've spoken to Stuart a lot over the last few weeks and he says, look, take your experience. You've obviously have a lot of experience now after everything over the summer and the amount of years you've been in Leinster. So don't be afraid to kind of share your opinion on things and speak up. Naturally, I'm not, I don't speak a whole lot in training, but if I have some kind of poignant and pertinent to say, I will pitch in. And I think it's getting the balance right of, you know, you have, when you speak, your words need to mean something. So don't overspeak. So I've definitely pitched in once or twice over the last kind of 2.5 weeks since we've been back in. I don't think I've come back with any unbelievable nuggets of wisdom yet. But yeah, definitely using my bit of experience from the summer to kind of chime in a little bit more around the place, just about getting that balance, really.
Yeah, it's another packed season come ahead. I won't ask you to explain the United Rugby Championship and exactly how it's going to work, but like, the talent that is there, you went through it earlier on in the back row at Leinster. It's pretty frightening. There can be no resting on your laurels when you come back in.
No, absolutely not. The standard is, especially, you know, we got back 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks or whatever it was, and we went straight into normal training with all the lads on a Monday. And like we've done a bit of running on our time off and a few, you know, bit of straight line stuff with your Bronco rep. So you're feeling, I'm not too unfit here. I've done a bit. But like you come back in and the Thursday that we got back in, this is our third day of training, was the last day of preseason for all the lads. So they are absolutely flying, herring around the place, and I'm absolutely dragging behind everyone.
Myself, did you do the dogginess when you came back from South Africa?
I definitely enjoyed myself for 2 weeks, but I think my anxiety kicks in pretty quickly and I need to do a little bit anyway. So I enjoyed myself as we were away, a few of myself, Robbie and Murray and stuff. So we definitely enjoyed the time off, but then when I got back, it was time to kind of get myself into the half decent shape. But the lads were absolutely flying it. So there was no kind of delusions of grandeur coming back in because everyone else was just at, you know, nines and tens and you're trying to just catch up with them and make sure that you're not falling behind at all. So I was humbled pretty quickly in the first few days getting back in with the lads, but I'm looking forward to playing now in the coming weeks and getting back in the blue jerseys. Feel like an age since I've worn it. So I'm excited for the season ahead.
Well, Jack, you're the perfect brand ambassador for Just Eat. You just savaged that juice that was in front of you there over the course of the interview.
Yeah.
They are the official food delivery partner of Leinster Rugby, delivering a range of healthy matchday and mealtime options straight to your door. This partnership will see Leinster supporters enjoying special offers throughout the season with a 20% celebratory discount even available on Just to Eat from 12 noon to 6 o'clock this Sunday as Leinster take on the Dragons at Rodney Parade. Mona and Conan, always a pleasure.
Awful. I'm going to kill Lowy. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to have to. I'll tell you. He has a few bad nicknames as well, but I don't know if I can say them.
No, they're not. They're not for broadcast just yet.
No, they're not. Not yet. It'll be in my book when I retire. Don't worry.
Great. We look forward to it. Jack, thanks as always.